Morning, Your Honor. Switching gears a bit, this is an immigration case.
Not to use an automobile analogy, Mr. Hagan.
I won't use. But on the other hand, I apologize for having to bring in a case which has a gruesome detail, as we've had earlier, but this is unavoidable. Your Honor, this is a matter of my client, Mr. Milinovich, who has applied for political asylum and was denied by the immigration judge and also for withholding of removal, which is the same effect, and was denied by the judge, and the Board of Immigration Appeals affirmed the judge. So you are reviewing the Board of Immigration Appeals and through them to the judge. Now, Your Honor, we just have two basic points here of issues. I just first want to state that the immigration judge found my client credible in his testimony at the trial. The judge also found that he had suffered persecution for his political beliefs and political opinions and activities, that the persecution was significant mistreatment. Now, the persecution, to get this over with quickly, he was beaten and suffered such injuries. He was in the hospital for 1 to 2 months and suffered the surgical removal of a testicle. Now, this was the judge's decision that he was persecuted and that he did suffer persecution because of his of his political beliefs. Now, the rule shows, the law says that once there is a finding of persecution, past persecution, that the burden of proof shifts from the plaintiff to the government. The government must then show, by preponderance of the evidence, that conditions have changed with regard to the petitioner in this country, that such
and,
that
and
if
isn't
he,
that, I mean, of course, that's the stage at which your client loses, because the immigration judge and then the board, as you comment, agrees, finds that conditions have indeed changed in Serbia and looks at various pieces of evidence and makes that factual determination. And so one of my questions is, isn't that the kind of finding to which we must defer to the agency? And my second point for you really is, you've also made a brief argument for humanitarian asylum, but his asylum petition was too late, and we can't really do anything about that. And as I understand the law, humanitarian asylum is a form of asylum. And so if your asylum petition is too late, you can't get humanitarian asylum either. You're either going to get withholding of removal, or you might get CAT or something, but not any form of asylum.
Well, Your Honor, let me just address those points first and second. First of all, the law provides and procedure provides that once the judge has made a determination of past persecution, there must be a further legal procedure, a stage two, if you will, of the proceedings, in which that burden that is shifted to the government must now be the beginning of a hearing, of a further extension of the hearing, and the government presents its evidence as to why the person would not be persecuted if they returned, and then the petitioner has a chance to present his evidence as to why he would be persecuted. The judge, instead of holding that part of the hearing, went straight on to his decision, and he became, in effect, the judge and the persecutor, the prosecutor.
No, I mean, I don't see anywhere in the regulations that you have to close off one hearing, give a month, you know, reschedule a hearing. It seems to me when you go in, I mean, it's up to the immigration judge to decide whether this can all be folded into one hearing or not. And if you're going to try to prove past persecution, you certainly know that gets you part of the way, but the government has the ability to rebut. And one sees cases like this. There might have been past persecution in Poland, but Poland is now a member of the European Union, and it's changed quite considerably. And so you could say, well, even though terrible things happened in the past, we see no chance of persecution in the future. And I think that's the way the immigration judge assessed Serbia.
Well, Your Honor, the point I would make is certainly can be done immediately, that, and it was. But at the point at which the judge said, I'm now going to issue my decision, the judge was that, at that point closing proceedings, closing any off any opportunity for my client to present any evidence in rebuttal to the rebuttable presumption that the government was presenting. In other words, my client could have argued, if he had been able to and been allowed to, he could have argued that while there has been a change in the government at the top, which is the only evidence that the government did present in rebuttal, where
also
I live,
there was evidence that his party had seats in parliament. That's
seats
not
in
just
parliament.
At the top. That's that filters down
true,
further.
True, but this is not a big country, but it's a country in which the person who persecuted him and a certain gentleman named Ratko Zakevich in his village, in his town, my client did not even have an opportunity to say whether Mr. Zakevich was still in power.
But the IJ thought that he could move to Belgrade or some other place and so thought that was not a dispositive fact.
And he didn't have a chance to reply to that either, which he could have and would have replied, as he had testified and pointed this out, that he had moved around. He had been to Belgrade. He had been to other parts of the country. In every case, he had been pursued. There had been phone calls, threats, both to himself and to his family, from this Mr. Zakevich. And the fact that that his party had now had some seats in the government does not mean that a local official who had and still could very much have power could persecute him. The way the law reads is that a person is persecuted if the government is either unwilling or unable to stop this persecution. So this Mr. Zakevich could have done whatever he wanted to the or had his allies do it to my client. My client had no chance to argue that. My client had no chance to.
What position would Zakevich hold?
He was the town. I guess you would call it equivalent to mayor. He was the sole political power in that small town.
He is now, or is with the time of
the point is, Your Honor, we don't know because we never had a chance to check, because the judge precluded any evidence on our part as to whether Mr. Zakevich was still in power, whether his friends were still in power. He truncated the hearing. He short-circuited the hearing that should have been a back and forth.
And you haven't tried to file a motion to reopen or anything like that? There's been no effort to follow up on that question?
Well, Your Honor, what we did was we appealed to the Board of Immigration Appeals. That's the procedure
that we
have.
Right, I know, but when new evidence, which would have a bearing, if Mr. Zakevich is actually still in power and able to roam around the country and threaten, it seems to me a motion to reopen is a procedure that factual information could come in using.
Well, Your Honor, it's a procedural matter, and we felt that a full hearing would have been not just one or two pieces of evidence, but a full hearing would be the only way in which we could adequately present our case. We were not permitted that. And to answer your second question, the humanitarian asylum, this was presented. This was presented at the hearing. I was not the attorney of record at that time. And the judge, in his decision, and the BIA in its decision, totally ignored that argument. That's under a different law. That's under a different rule. And humanitarian asylum does not require that there be finding that he would be persecuted if he returned. What it says is, and the leading cases in this matter are one which is decided by this court, Bruchai, which was a woman in Kosovo, actually, who had horrific things done to her. And just incidentally, one of the reasons my client got into trouble twice, and the first time was because he refused he was drafted and refused to fight in Kosovo and participate in that genocide and those horrific events. So just as an aside, this court held.
But you need to have an asylum petition filed, properly filed, before you can move to the humanitarian ground, as I understand the law. I'll ask the government that, but I thought so.
The government argues that, Your Honor, but they do not put in the fact that there are exceptions to that time rule for asylum. He did not file within the first year, we understand. Mm-hmm. There are two exceptions. One is changed circumstances, which is what the judge threw out when he simply looked at a written report, a government report saying Mr. Milosevic was no longer president. But he did not look into the details of what would happen to my client. And I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought there. The procedure that the judge followed did not allow for us to have any further thing. Now, humanitarian, or I should say it's called, asylum, does not fall under exactly the same rules. The fact that he didn't file under 1 year, within 1 year, there are two exceptions to that rule. One is changed circumstances, which we're not conceding because we never had a chance to say that they weren't changed. The other is extraordinary circumstances. And we argue that the beating he suffered, the hospitalization, the loss of the testicle, were certainly extraordinary circumstances that should, if we had had a chance to even present that to the judge, have given the judge enough to grant the asylum on humanitarian grounds. The main case on this, besides Bruchai, is a matter of Chen, which has been codified, and the matter of Chen says that...
We'll read that case, and I think I've got to
certainly
ask you to close up.
Okay, well, we say then that our client wants due process. Our client wants the procedure that he is entitled to under the law and was not granted. And I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
Well, you see, the problem is that you used it. And
Sorry.
So I will give you an extra minute for rebuttal, but I will also give the government two extra minutes.
Okay.
Come on up, government. Okay, Mr. Smulo.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Daniel Smulo on behalf of Attorney General Holder. A couple of points that Your Honors were discussing with my opposing counsel this morning. With respect to humanitarian asylum, Mr. Milanovic has conceded that he failed to file within 1 year, and that bars his entire application for asylum. He does remain eligible for withholding of removal theoretically. Now, matter of Chen is a BIA precedent that introduced the concept of humanitarian asylum, and it has since been codified by regulation at 8 Code of Federal Regulations 1208.13B1 capital B.
Start again.
Sure, I apologize for that. It's 8 CFR, section 1208.13B.
What?
B as in boy, 1 capital B again as in boy. And it continues from there. And in that regulation is codified the concept of humanitarian asylum. That is, one who has been persecuted so horrendously may indeed be entitled for asylum, notwithstanding the fact there may be no future threat of persecution upon their return.
So in other words, it changes the normally rebuttable presumption on threat of future persecution to simply lifting that requirement altogether.
That's correct. Now, the fact that Mr. Milanovic failed to file within 1 year, and I think it was about 7 or 8 years too late, precludes him from any type of asylum, including the subsidiary humanitarian asylum. Now, withholding of removal is discussed in regulations at 8 CFR 1208.16. If Your Honors were to review that subsection of the code, you'll see there's no equivalent for humanitarian withholding of removal. It's just humanitarian asylum. Ms. Milanovic is barred from it by his failure to file and apply for asylum within 1 year.
But now somebody, I was just going to say, somebody who could qualify, though, for the extension, the extraordinary circumstances extension, could also, in theory, get humanitarian asylum.
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's an issue that the immigration judge considered. And there are two reasons that Mr. Milanovic cited for his late-filed petition. One is the drafting of his son into the Serbian army. And this court, I think most recently in Margos, collects the cases that says mandatory military service does not amount to persecution. Particularly, this is Mr. Milanovic's son, not Mr. Milanovic himself. And the second reason was Mr. Milanovic claimed that he had no fear of return until the Department of Homeland Security issued a notice to appear, which initiates charging. The IJ properly called those excuses, and they did not amount to the changed circumstances. This court also is without jurisdiction to consider that aspect of the holding under 8 U.S.C. 1252A3.
Now, didn't the IJ essentially rely on the change in government alone as rebutting the presumption without any discussion as to whether political persecution had in fact diminished or even whether the political change had trickled down to the local level?
What the IJ did was, and much of this is through Mr. Milanovic's testimony himself, found that Mr. Milanovic raised his claim as an initial matter that he was a pro-Democrat. And at the time that he fled Serbia in 1996, Milosevic was in power. Now, Mr. Milanovic admitted and testified, as he should have, Milosevic had been toppled, and he in fact died while in proceedings in The Hague. Mr. Milanovic further acknowledged that the Democratic Party was the ruling party in Serbia at the time of his asylum hearing, and further, his Serbian Renewal Party had seats in the parliament. This, by any measure, is a fundamental change in the government and a fundamental change in circumstances. What happened here, Your Honors, is a pro-Democrat who had been persecuted, a finding of the IJ, no longer had the presumption no longer of a future threat to life or freedom no longer existed because the government had changed to exactly what he had been advocating for back in 1996 when he fled Serbia. And the Brukaj case, which is, I believe, a 381 F3rd, supports that very finding and affirms an IJ's finding of a change in circumstances based on this very same change in government.
Now, you also stated that even if the local official who had persecuted the respondent remained a threat, he could safely relocate elsewhere within this small country. Where in the IJ's decision is a consideration of the factors relevant to that determination and the finding that he could safely relocate elsewhere? You know, without any discussion by Judge Zerbe and any consideration of the factors that are set forth in 8 CFR 1208.13, how can that be a basis to affirm?
It may not be, Your Honors, but here the political persecution, and this is where the IJ stopped, and I think that suffices here. Perhaps the IJ could have gone on to consider whether he could relocate, but the IJ did not, the BIA did not, and therefore I think the agency decision rests solely, as you point out, on the change in the government as sufficient to rebut the presumption of a future threat to life or freedom.
He said he could safely relocate, but he doesn't discuss it.
True. He said it. The record supports it through testimony such as the fact that from 1993 until his departure, Mr. Milanovic had not been persecuted in his home village, and he had at times, as I understood his testimony, went to Belgrade to avoid such persecution. That presumably is enough, but here I think the change in political circumstances suffices to affirm the IJ and the board's decision.
You know, I was wondering how we can properly review the IJ's decision when we do not even have a complete transcription of the oral decision, which, you know, you did acknowledge in your brief. Are we supposed to simply assume that the missing part was not significant?
I think there is an exhaustion issue on Mr. Milano's part. It's not something that he had raised before and not something that he pressed in his brief to this court. So there's an exhaustion issue and a waiver issue. Both of those would suffice to permit this court to review it. Now, I certainly don't know what missing language was included in that opinion. And the record is not clear on that point. What does seem clear is that the IJ's fundamental holdings and the board's affirmance of those holdings, the change in political circumstances and the failure to file within 1 year and not being excused by it, are all plainly put forth in his decision, which does appear in the record, as well as the affirmation by the board.
Are you conceding, then, that we really can't read only the board's opinion here, that we need to read the board's opinion as supplemented by the IJ's?
I read the board's opinion to permit that. It's affirming the IJ for the reasons set forth. It's citing to the exhibits. It cites to exhibits. I'm sorry, let me be more clear.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm just trying to make sure that it's the position of the government that we can't just read the board's opinion by itself, that we need to dig back down to the IJ's opinion. Sometimes we read only the board's opinion.
Certainly.
Of course, if the board has written enough to give us the sense that it's really taken over the case.
This is somewhat interesting in the way the board drafted the language of its decision, in that it seems to suggest that it is affirming and adding its own reasons to the IJ's opinion. It often uses that language. Here it did not. In circumstances such as that, this court reviews, of course. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
In circumstances such as that, this court does review both the IJ's decision and the board's.
Okay.
Here I think the board could suffice. The board's decision could stand on its own, but I think it was intended, again, this is how the government reads that decision, to mean that it was relying on the IJ's as well, affirming and adding its own reasons. If there are no further questions, the government would submit on its brief and ask the court to deny the petition for review. Thank you.
And we're going to give you one extra minute, Mr. Hagen, because otherwise it really isn't fair.
I just want to make a couple of points. The argument that the judge used the government country report is the main argument that the judge gave for the fact that changed conditions. However, in our brief, we cite several cases. Number one is DIM, matter of DIM, and it says that the ouster of a government is not enough by itself to show changed circumstances. This is backed up by Vujicic when it says there are more than mere government changing, that statement, that it's needed more than that. Banks also says there need to be particularized evidence needed, and criticizes other decisions by the BIA and by immigration judges, chronic over-reliance on these simple country reports, which don't tell the whole story. They has to be particularized to that individual and what would happen to him if he were forced to return to his country. So I just wanted to point out that the judge, even in his own taking over the prosecution's role, did not, in fact, really follow and go through and do what the prosecution should have done, which is to say this individual would not suffer persecution.
Thank you. Okay, thanks to both counsel. Case will be taken under advisement.